Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Bijou Banter. Sorry for that brief delay, but we are now here in the KRUI studio on Friday, November 12th, 2021. And we got Orson Codd.
Hello.
And Daniel McGregor Hoyer.
Hello.
As well as myself, Matthew Huh. And today we are going to be talking about two mainstream films. Both are not playing at Film Scene at the Chauncey, but they are out now, and they are very fun, I guess. Fun in different ways, and that is Eternals, the 26th film in the MCU, and Army of Thieves, the Army of the Dead prequel, now streaming on Netflix. And we're going to start off with Eternals, which is, as stated, the latest MCU film. It's from director Chloe Zhao, who recently won the Oscar for Best Director for her film Nomadland. And it stars, it has a really good ensemble cast of Gemma Chan, Richard Madden, Kumail Nanjiani, Leah McHugh, Brian Tyree Henry, Lauren Ridloff, Barry Keoghan, Don Lee, Harish Patel, Kit Harington, Salma Hayek, and Angelina Jolie. And The Eternals is about the immortal alien race of the same name, and they reemerge after thousands of years of hiding to protect the Earth from these invading enemies known as the Deviants. What did we think?
I was saying this to you before we started the episode. I genuinely don't know what to think with this movie. Like, I think there's some aspects of it that I'm really intrigued by, with this idea of like these god-like figures having been on Earth for over 7,000 years. And, you know, how they affected history and what they've been through. But at the same time, I feel like the premise of them just kind of retcons the rest of the MCU. It makes everything else seem insignificant because, like, they weren't around. I'm sure we'll get into it. But there's even a reference where it's like some of the prominent figures before the Eternals knew who the Eternals were but never thought about reaching out to them. To me, that's just a little interesting. I think as a movie, it's just very messy. I think it would have been better served as a Disney Plus show, because you're balancing this giant ensemble cast and these grandiose ideas about, you know, the creation of life, ancient species, time, whatever. And you're trying to condense it in a 2.5 hour movie. And you can feel that it's long. There are some big down moments in this film. And I think it just would have been better served to introduce all of these ideas, characters, scenarios, whatever, in a 8 to 10 hour Disney Plus series.
Yeah, I gotta be honest. When the trailer was dropped for this film, this was the first time I was not interested in seeing a Marvel film. Like, that is a first for me. Because the others, I mean, at least I can kind of say, okay, Thor the Dark World or Captain Marvel, I can kind of give credit where it's like, I'm still gonna see them. I mean, because I honestly kind of want to see how they fit into the MCU. And how these stories fit in the MCU. Eternals wasn't anything I was asking for. And neither was Guardians, but Guardians at least looked like it was interesting and had some style to it. This film, part of it could be I saw it at 9 o'clock on Wednesday night. It's a mess. A huge, huge mess. And I like Chloe Zhao. I mean, I think I actually have some appreciation for her directing in last year's Best Picture winner, Nomadland. Like, I really have appreciation for the fact that she usually allows the camera to sit for a bit and, you know, just kind of let us embrace some of the environments the film's in. Although I appreciate, the technical aspects, because the visual effects are really great, and, the cinematography is really good, and the acting, for the most part, is pretty solid, I'm just not intrigued by any of the characters. The characters are what usually drives Marvel films. I wouldn't say completely, but it's, that's what we look forward to. Seeing new characters. I mean, that's what made Shang-Chi so great, because Shang-Chi was an interesting character. Here, the characters are just so one-note. And there's, nothing that makes sense about their motivations. And although Zhao is giving out all these ideas to, are new for a Marvel film, because it's kind of that she watched, because apparently, I think she said that one of the characters is based off of Cavill's Man of Steel. And
makes sense.
Yeah, and it's I admire the fact that she's trying to, you know, take it in a way that's actually interesting, which there are parts when it is interesting, like what does it mean to be a hero? What does it mean to be God among humans? Because I think that's a concept that honestly DC would tackle, not Marvel.
Yeah.
I don't think it worked out that well because the characters were just so boring and the story was just so clunky, and that was super hard for me to get into.
It was definitely an interesting film because Chloe Zhao, who has just gotten off her win for Nomadland, going from that to directing a big budget MCU film, I was incredibly intrigued by. Even though I basically knew nothing about the Eternals, I had only heard about them by name, but I knew nothing about their personalities or like what they actually did. But the first trailer, I was actually really impressed. Like, wow, this actually looks like they're going to try something different with the MCU. It's like, we're all MCU fans. And there's that stigma that MCU detractors have. It's like, oh, Marvel films, they're all just the same. They're like copy and paste. It's like, to a degree, they are partially true. But at least with Eternals, you could tell from that first trailer, they were going to do something ambitious and something that the MCU has never tackled before. But then the reviews came out, and Eternals is currently sitting at a 47% on Rotten Tomatoes, making it the lowest rated MCU film by far. Like, Thor the Dark World, I think, is like mid-60s somehow. But I was just shocked that out of all the ones, this was the one that got the rotten score. And then when I saw it, I could kind of see it, actually, because it is not a very good film, unfortunately. It is incredibly ambitious for what it wants to tackle with its themes, its messages, and even its storytelling too. It is a very meaty film, but it's one of those films where it's like, yeah, you have a lot of content in it, but there's no progression. The movie is essentially all exposition, and it has very little payoff, unfortunately, considering the movie is, how long is this? It's 157 minutes. It's the second longest MCU film behind Avengers Endgame, which is crazy to me. Yeah. But so little happens, and so little, like, I remember from it, even though I saw it last week. It's just impressive that it's like you have this incredible amount of scope and scale, but I just felt literally nothing. It tries to have a soul, but it ends up being the most soulless Marvel film by far, mostly because the characters are so deplorable, which we could probably get into. But the main reason why they suffer so much is because they try to give a reason for why they never came down to fight, which is not a good reason because that just makes them look very weak in hindsight. And also, they have no personality. There's no development. There's no arcs. There's no stakes or conflict for me to care about these characters, which is so unfortunate because these are all really good actors. This is a very good director, too. And it looks really nice. It has really good visuals. The powers are really cool, too. But it's like you have all these flashy elements, but there's no given purpose or circumstance, which is very frustrating because this really could have been the next epic Marvel film.
Yeah, because when you're introduced to these characters, it's like, oh, I mean, this is kind of cool. This is very intriguing. I wonder what these characters are like. And they don't have much personality, maybe apart from, say, somebody like Kamal Nanjiani's character, Kango. And I forgot the name of the one that is played by the deaf actor. Like, she had
Makari.
Yeah, I mean, Makari. Like, she had some personality. But it's like, I'm guessing the issue I have is that these characters don't really serve much of a purpose in the overall story when you think about it. Because, like, Nanjiani, and without giving any spoilers, doesn't really have a big of a role in this.
There had to be something production-wise. Not to interrupt, but I was thinking, like, they always do this in, like, the superhero movie where there's that one character that's like, I can't do this, and they leave right before the big throwdown. And then the big throwdown happens, and that character comes back. And I was like, is that what they're going to do? I mean, it's not a spoiler. He doesn't come back. And I'm like, was there a production thing? Like, that was a very odd choice, if you ask me.
It was.
Because he got, you know, I don't want to glorify, you know, someone's body because all body types are different. He got shredded for this movie.
Yeah, I remember that.
I hate to say it like this, but I've seen other YouTube reviewers say it. He doesn't get that quote-unquote shirtless Marvel scene where, like, he really gets, you know, you've seen all these other, like, actors that, you know, get really fit for these roles, and, like, you get to see them flex their arms or their veins pop or whatever. He's usually just wearing, like, a purple bomber jacket, even though it looks super cool. Like, he just kind of leaves halfway through.
I mean, he's flexing those arms, man.
Yeah, he's flexing
in the opening, when he's...
Which, that Bollywood dance number, they really hyped it up. Like, he's going to do a Bollywood dance number. It kind of sucked. I wanted it to actually be, like, super lively and, like, fun, like a lot of Bollywood dance numbers are. He doesn't even, like, really sing in it. He just kind of does, like, a little, like, smoldering look and, like, twists his arms a couple times. And I'm like, this doesn't feel like an actual Bollywood dance number. It feels like a caricature of one.
It does. And it's one of those things where one thing that I was really looking forward to was the cultural representation. Just because Marvel and or Disney in general, they're trying to be incredibly diverse in terms of their casting and also their representation. And it's important. It's very important to have that, because this is a superhero film, a mainstream Marvel film directed by an Asian woman. The main lead is a British Chinese woman, Gemma Chan. We have Kamal Nanjiani, who's Pakistani. We have a deaf superhero, the first deaf superhero. And she's black too. And we also have Marvel's first gay superhero in Brian Tyree Henry, who plays Phaistos. Which it's like, it's great that you have all this representation, but what I was really disappointed, and actually could be a bit seen as a bit problematic, is that they don't do anything with it. It felt very corporate. It almost felt like, hey, let's just have, okay, we have our gay superhero, okay, check. We have our deaf superhero, check. I wish they did more with like their character and their personality with that representation, but it felt very much like, okay, we have to put this in because we feel obligated to. And that I found to be pretty bothersome, because it's like, no, this is very important. If you don't handle it correctly, kind of like what we talked about with Last Night in Soho and how it handled mental illness in a very problematic fashion. Not to say that it never got to that point in Eternals, but it just felt incredibly superficial, which it's like, it's to the point where it's like, okay, if they didn't even have that representation, it would have been just as bad, if not worse.
I mean, it would have been like the same, and which is unfortunate, because, you know, I guarantee a lot of people really want this representation, but it's like, it just feels like sometimes, like, you know, when you know, you know, like whenever you're watching a movie, that there is a businessman on set, just like checklist, and it's like, I get the same thing like most Disney films nowadays. It's like when they made LeFou from Beauty and the Beast gay. It's like, they didn't feel like a choice to make him gay just because they wanted to explore the character. They just made him gay for the sake of being
the title.
Yeah.
Or when they said that the Star Wars movie was going to have the first same-sex kiss, and then for a millisecond, it's in the background, and it's like,
I'll give it this. It's not nearly as bad as that, but it's like, for example, with Brian Tyree Henry, when we're introduced to him, or not introduced to him in like our reality, he has a husband, he has a son, and it's like, okay, you gotta come with us because we gotta defeat the deviants. Really, the only thing that shows that he is in fact a member of the LGBTQ+ community is that he has a kiss with his husband, that's it. Like, there's really nothing else. Which is like, okay, cool, you have that, but what did it add to the character though? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So
the characters themselves, though. Maybe it's because I'm a DC fan. They're a little copy and paste from DC Justice League. Like, you got the Flash character, the Superman character, you know what I mean? Like, the Wonder Woman character, and it's like, I mean, I don't know that much about Eternals, much like 99% of the population, but I've read a couple of those comics, so I don't think it's like they're ripping them off, but I'm like, I feel like you could have done something a little different.
Yeah, like, I mean, I feel like it's just that character-wise, it's like they don't necessarily, since there's so many, you barely get time to explore personalities from them. Like, I think really, there's like times where it's like the film is such a slow burn. And yeah, Chloe Zhao is known for her slow burns. I mean, Nomadland was a slow burn, but I think it worked in favor of that film.
But also, too, Nomadland wasn't 2.5 hours.
Like, yeah, it wasn't. It was 1 hour and 51.
Yeah.
But
and that comes to the biggest problem, which I already addressed when I introduced the film. It is all exposition.
Yeah.
They spend so much time just establishing, like, they. Basically, the movie jumps back and forth in time because the Eternals are immortal. They can't die, really. The only thing that can kill them are the Deviants and themselves. So they keep going back in time to be like, oh, they're saving humanity and all that. And then when they get to reality, they realize the Deviants are coming back. They have to reunite all the other, Eternals.
Yeah.
But it's such a repetitive story for, like, almost 1.5 hours.
You don't even get all the Eternals in, like, only in the very beginning, really. You get them all together. But, like, in the current day, you don't get some of the Eternals together until like the last hour of the movie.
Which even that's like the climax, really. Yeah, it's like, okay, the stakes are supposedly high, but there's no real establishment of like why I should care about any of these consequences. Like, yeah, you have this massive hand coming out of the earth and I simply feel nothing from that, which is like, why? How did you do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really cool concept. Like, these are great concepts. And it has, like, those superhero concepts, and it has the ideas. But it's just, like, I would care if the characters were interesting. And they're not, unfortunately. Even though the performances, like, the actors try. Like, Richard Madden tries, and Gemma Chan tries, and Salma Hayek with the limited time she has shies. And I forgot, like, of years of being in Adam Sandler films. Like, at least, like, this is probably one of the first times in a while since Frida I've seen her in a good performance. And it's just a shame that you have all these actors really giving it their all, but it's just the characters are not interesting, and there's nothing that really helps us indicate that they're a union. I mean, yeah, we see them fight together, but what else is there to kind of like say, oh yeah, these characters have a lot of chemistry like the Avengers? Like, they don't have that chemistry. No.
They don't. But we're going to move into a quick PSA, and we'll be right back with more Eternals. Welcome back to Bijou Banter. We're continuing our conversation on the latest Marvel film, Eternals. And I wanted to talk about something that a lot of people had questions about even before the film was released. And that is, if the Eternals are supposedly these immortal, powerful beings, where were they when Thanos came down and snapped away half of humanity? They even talk about this in the trailer, too. And I knew it wasn't going to be the best answer, because I had a feeling it's like, okay, whatever they say, it's still going to make them feel incredibly weak and cowardly. But their reason was basically was that, okay, in the beginning, Gemma Chan is talking with her boyfriend, who's played by Kit Harington, and he's just like, why didn't you guys come down to stop Thanos? He's like, we were told not to interfere. And it's like, well, why? And then it's just like, because if we interfered, then humanity would develop in ways and it would destroy them even further. And what I'm thinking is just like, okay, fair enough, but you still let billions of lives die in how many world wars, all the just like natural disasters that people were unfortunately killed in, all the attacks from like different, I don't know if I could say that word, but it's like in regards to just like warring conflicts and destruction and mass genocide too. It's like, you let so many innocent lives die just for the fact that it's like, oh, if we came down, they would develop further and further tear each other apart. That is completely irrelevant because humanity did that naturally. So when they do come down to fight the deviants, it really just doesn't make me care about the characters more because they are unlikable. Because they are just completely, like, their moral ideologies are just so out of whack that it doesn't make me connect with them in any way, shape, or form. If anything, they are the villains of the story and the deviants are the heroes.
Yeah.
No, at the
beginning of the episode, I mentioned that there was a reference to an Avengers character that I felt like it was a bit of a retcon. It was a very interesting thing. And this isn't a spoiler, where the character of Kingo says that when Thor was a kid, Thor like would follow him around and admired him, wanted to be like him. And I'm like, Thor's, you know, like what? 1500 years old or something.
Something like that.
Did Thor, who's, you know, for the most part, pretty smart, not once think, hey, I know this guy.
Yeah.
This group of people that are pretty eternal and very strong. Maybe they can help us fight Thanos. That to me just, I felt like was a little bit of a retcon. So, they were trying to make a joke, but it just didn't work, I don't think.
Yeah. And it's like, they literally, if the Eternals came down to help, not only would they have defeated Thanos, but also they probably would have saved the life of Tony Stark, and he would still be alive and making movies now in the MCU. So it's like, it's just, it's such a weird shoehorned retcon of just the entire MCU canon that is not only explained in the most boring, superficial way possible, but you somehow made the most unlikable, boring, and underdeveloped Marvel heroes in any Marvel film ever.
Yeah, and people give, like, flack to Brie Larson for Captain Marvel, but at least Brie Larson was trying to at least give, like, her some character, despite the fact that the writing practically let her down. But, I mean, with this, it's like, what?
Like, Captain Marvel is overpowered, but at least I can find a distinct personality with her in terms of her character traits. And how, yeah, even though she's OP, she still has this amount of, like, struggle or conflict. The Eternals have none of that. Zero.
I mean, I remember I was in the theater, and once they gave that half-baked answer on why they weren't there, a couple in front of me, and there's, like, five people in the theater, by the way. Nobody's going to see a movie on Wednesday night at 9 o'clock. No.
Yeah, true.
Apart from me, because I got a busy schedule. But I was in the theater, and once Jim Akonge, that half-baked answer, the couple in front of me was just like, put their hands on their face. It's like, oh, God. And so it was like, yeah, even your audience that was willing to see this Wednesday night at 9:05 because he has an obligation to see every Marvel film in theaters because he's been seeing it since Iron Man came to screen, was just super frustrated at that half-baked answer.
Yeah.
It's bad enough too that, like, just by that answer, we can tell that they could have stopped any world tragedy. But the icing on the cake is that there is a shot of the atom bomb explosion of Hiroshima, implying, because basically Brian Tyree Henry's Eternal character, he's like the ideas man of the group. He's the one that he's like, oh, I want to create the steam engine. I want to create the plow for like farming. But then Salma Hayek's like, no, you can't do that basically because we want humanity to develop that on our own. And then out of nowhere, the movie cuts to the atomic bomb explosion of Hiroshima. It says Hiroshima 1945. I'm just like, what? And then it shows Brian Tyree Henry be like, I could have stopped it. It's like, yes, you could have. And it's like, okay, I understand that it's like they could have stopped any tragedy. I don't think we needed to see that because that just felt incredibly tasteless and kind of just way out of left field to show that atomic bomb explosion. There was no subtlety and you didn't need to show that because it was honestly kind of offensive.
It was very overblown and it's like...
overblown.
I mean...
I'm sorry.
Oh, dang, man. luckily we're not in that era. But it's just like, even like saying no matter what side you were on and during that time, it's like... there's no need to include that.
No.
I mean, no, it's on level of, like, say, Michael Bay with Pearl Harbor tasteless, but it's still pretty tasteless.
It's tasteless in the fact that it was unnecessary. Like, based on that information, we can infer that and imagine that in our own minds. We don't need to see that and especially and draw so much emotional attention to that.
Yeah. I thought... I mean, not to switch gears, but in terms of, like, the characters, I thought the worst was Sprite.
I hated Sprite.
Oh, yeah, I hate Sprite.
I hated Sprite.
First of all, the wig was terrible, but the character herself just felt so annoying, like, just there to complain, and she also pulled a Loki, which I thought was a little interesting.
Yeah.
But, again, copy and paste, but, again, I was like, just a terrible character, and I get why they did the thing at the end. Because it just makes sense if you know how the business works. But at the same time, I'm like, well, I just don't like the character.
I see where they were going with her character, but they just made her the most annoying and unlikable of an already group of unlikable characters. But it was like just the peak of it. I was just like, every time she was on screen, I'm like, oh God, here we go again. And also when I was watching the film, I was like, why does this actress look so familiar? Like I've seen her before. And I looked it up. She played the sister in The Lodge. So that didn't help either. I know you've seen the...
Man.
Yeah, I'm just like, why does she look so familiar? And it's like, oh, that's why.
And
so
it gives Matthew another reason to hate The Lodge.
Yeah.
Add that like to the list.
You play two of the most unlikable, hateable characters I've ever seen in a film. Good job. I'm sure she's a nice person in real life, so I don't want to draw too much hate to her. Don't go hating on this girl. Yeah, it's just like...
Also, I thought it was interesting that they got Bill Skarsgård of all people to play like
this
deviant crow, which they didn't really explain how that worked, how he was able to go from like an animal to like a person kind of. And then again, it's not I won't spoil it exactly. He's in the movie for like less than 2 minutes.
Yeah, he's barely in it.
So why they got him, I don't know.
I don't mean, it's like, hey, you are it the clown. Can you be as something just as less scary and less intimidating despite the fact that you practically have all this power?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I guess I could do it for the paycheck. But,
maybe he got something from his dad because Stellan Skarsgård was in early MCU films.
Yeah.
He was in Thor and Avengers.
Apparently they were going to cast Alexander, his older brother, who played Tarzan. He was one of the people that was in the running for Icarus.
Well, so, time to go for discount Skarsgård. Oh, you were in Dune? Sorry, you can't do that. Oh, you're unavailable? Sorry about that. Oh, hit the clown. Would you like to be here? And like,
It's just so boring, though. Like, that's another thing. It's like, this is easily the most uninteresting and unengaging Marvel film because hardly anything happens. It's like, okay, I really like how they're trying to handle these themes, and I like how it is visually very different, but as if you don't have a good story there that has no progression, no sort of conflict or stakes that make me want to care about these characters, it becomes a chore to sit through. And if the movie were just 2 hours, then maybe it would have been a bit more serviceable, but it's over 2.5. And it's like, oh my goodness, I am just like so unengaged right now. You are doing nothing to make me care.
I mean, I try to be engaged. I mean, I guess I wouldn't say, because I went to this film with very, very low expectations. This is like a first low expectation for any Marvel film. But I was like, okay, yeah, I mean, there's like some stuff I would say I was intrigued by. Like, I mean, I was intrigued by some of the concepts about where they came from, how they were made. And it's kind of like, you know, kind of going with like the artificial intelligence type thing. or like Blade Runner type themes. Like that was pretty interesting, but it didn't go that far with them. It didn't really serve the plot that well. And it's like, I think the film is really wanting to kind of be the next big Avengers, but I think what made the other solo Marvel films and like the new hero origin stories more interesting is that they're smaller stories. I mean, well, we got Shang-Chi early this year, and that was a smaller story, and it stayed within his own story. And you also got like Doctor Strange, which kind of stayed within his own role, and you got
the Guardians, if you're talking about like cosmic stuff. Other than referencing Thanos in the first movie and like the Infinity Stones, those are literally singularly contained to them themselves in like a giant area of the universe, but they don't like
reach into others. More contained with those. Here it's like, oh, it's worldwide, it's universe bending, and it's like, okay, where's everybody else? I mean, that's like a common complaint about all Marvel films, but at least I could give it the suspension of disbelief that they wanted to contain those a bit. Why is this one not contained like the others?
I don't understand.
It's weird to me because like the MCU, you know, started off relatively small and contained, like you were saying, and now they've started to breach into like the bigger aspects, like the cosmic parts. I mean, they're literally about to break open the multiverse in like less than a month, and characters from presumably like all these Fox X-Men movies, maybe even the Fantastic Four and Spider-Man are probably going to be in, you know, Spider-Man or Doctor Strange 2 or whatever. But yet the one concept to me that just seems like they're biting off more than they can chew is this idea of like these god-type figures living among men and women. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like it's doing too much that like, I just can't believe it. Like,
it's not only doing too much, but it's like, if you're going to introduce a group of characters that are essentially immortal, that have no real struggle or have very little weakness because they are in fact immortal, you have to try incredibly hard to give them some sort of human soul. And it's like, I can tell Chloe Zhao really did try with this because she did co-write the script too. And then apparently Marvel really didn't, she was given a lot of creative control with this project too, supposedly. And it's like, I could tell, like, I could sense the ambition, and I respect that to some degree, but it's just, it was done in a very just uninteresting, unengaging, overly long way.
I said this to you before the episode started. It's a very ambitious Marvel film, but boy, did Chloe Zhao not understand the assignment of what she was given. Like, I get it. There are a lot of directors working nowadays that will come out and be like, well, Marvel films aren't technically cinema or whatever. But this just really strikes me as one as, I'm not saying this, I don't know this for a fact. It just strikes me as one where maybe the studio approached her and said, hey, do you want to do a Marvel film? You can have a lot of creative control. We know you're this upcoming powerhouse in Hollywood. We want to work with you. But it was like she had never seen any of the other Marvel films or understood what the rules were of this universe.
Yeah, like, I never got one instance apart, like, say, from references to Thor, Captain America, and Iron Man.
And Superman, which I thought were stupid.
That was something I did not understand. I think that's a whole episode. Nah, not even a whole episode, but whatever. But I feel like this story does not fit within the overall MCU. Like, even with the post-credits scene, which I think eventually we got to talk about, even then, it's like, it still doesn't feel like I'm watching a Marvel film.
So then here's my question. Do they do another Eternals? Like, is it worth it? Because
I mean, they said the Eternals will return.
That doesn't mean anything.
I know, like, yeah, but it's like,
technically, again, with the post-credits scene, which I don't know if we want to spoil since it's still out there.
I'd say we shouldn't.
Technically, an Eternal that could return because of, I mean, who's playing the Eternal? But again, like, I don't know if like the Eternals need to come back. Like, they kind of set this giant cliffhanger ending up, which I think seems cool. But at the same time, like, I don't see how these characters can factor into the Avengers without being OP.
Not only being OP, but also impacting the direction of the MCU in some way, especially now that the multiverse is going to break. If the multiverse wasn't breaking, then maybe I could see it in a different way. But now that it is heavily implied that in Spider-Man No Way Home, the multiverse is going to break open, and also Doctor Strange 2 will. So it's like, if those two films weren't in development, I don't see what they could do with the Eternals now, just because it's kind of like, okay, you're leaving the door open, but to what? Like, there is a cliffhanger ending, but there's still, it goes back to the fact that there's no conflict. There's no stakes.
How do they like match up with Kang, who they're setting up to be the next big bad? Like,
who
I don't,
knows?
Because that's another thing too, is like, I don't understand like who's the real powerhouse here. Is it Kang the Conqueror? Is it the TVA? Is it, you know, Arisham or whatever that thing's name is? Like, I don't get it. Like, and I feel like Kevin Feige and co really need to address like, what is the end all be all in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, if that makes sense.
What if it just all ends with just Stan Lee writing
Comic? That'd be funny.
Like, that would be I would honestly go for that. Like, say, oh, Stan, are you done with that? Yeah, but I don't think it's gonna fit in here. And it's like Feige looks at it, it's like, huh. A new movie, I'll take it.
I just don't think they need to do the Eternals again. Like, unless they can find a way to really make it work, I mean, they probably will, let's be honest. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't know if they need to. I think it was a one and done. Like,
I think so too.
Yeah, I mean,
I could see them making another one, and I'll probably go see it too, tell you the truth.
Yeah.
But not to say that I'm forced to see any Marvel film, but it's like, you know what? If you're leaving the door open for something, I guess I'm curious then. But there is very, very little here, unfortunately, which is crazy considering they're trying to set up so much. There's so much that they're trying to develop in quotes, or give some sort of expository detail to. But it ultimately amounts to very little to nothing.
Yeah, it's just sad because it was such an interesting concept. But I just think, if it was outside of the MCU, it would be viewed as a great piece of science fiction cinema, I think.
Yeah, probably.
But because it's in the MCU and we already know this world, and it's so far into the MCU with what has happened, like, I don't know. It's just a little bit of a letdown.
A little bit.
Well, I think the Eternals are cool enough characters where, if, again, I hate to say it like this, I know it's been heavily rumored Chloe Zhao is doing Star Wars next.
Seriously?
Maybe stick to Star Wars and not come back. You know what I mean? Like, I think she can work a lot better there because that, you know, not saying Marvel isn't, but there's a grander scope of things I think you can do in Star Wars than Marvel because of what they've already kind of set up here. I think it's rumored that like her Star Wars film would be set before any of the Star Wars films.
Oh, so it's the prequel to the prequels.
Yeah, the prequel to the prequels, but I don't know. I just think if you're going to do Eternals again, maybe find a different filmmaker who will just know them better. Like, I'm not saying this person exactly, but find like a James Gunn or a Taika Waititi or someone that can understand like the fun cosmic aspects and not make it kind of like dreary and sad.
Also, give more life to it too, just
because
it's such a dreary, depressing film, which I think that's the vibe that they were going for. There's no heart or soul in it.
I'm more or less interested.
Even though it is the first Marvel film to have a love scene, there is no soul.
Yeah, that was a little weird, but I'm more or less interested if our listeners or you guys know what the rumored plot of Black Panther 2 is and how Eternals actually kind of sets up Black Panther 2 with the, let's just say, the figure coming out of the ocean.
Oh.
And so if you know your Marvel history, you know, certain characters and that might be rumored to be in Black Panther 2, but I think that's more interesting than the actual Eternals movie itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just it just doesn't know what it wants to be. I mean, I feel that the movie really had a lot of like good intentions. It really wanted to do something like, hey, let's separate ourselves from the Marvel mold a bit. Which I do give credit, like it wants to do that. And Chloe Zhao gives out really good, ambitious concepts. But I just feel like that it's probably that it shouldn't be in a story that is already too big. It's like she has a bag full of candy and it just keeps ripping itself apart. It just has too much inside the bag. And it's kind of like, say, with at least with the others, it's like the bag, everything they need to put in that bag fit just right. Here it's like it's too much and too many characters, too many plot lines and too much exposition.
I saw a Letterboxd review that said like Eternals 1 should have just been like setting them up throughout the history. And then Eternals 2 should have been like the parts set in present day.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that's how they should have done it. It's like,
yeah. And then there's also this weird thing in the movie where it's like, it's just switching back and forth between present day and like past day. It's like, hey, I want to see them develop like in this world, but it's like I don't want to have a Nolan cross cuts every single minute. That's specifically Christopher Nolan's thing, not Marvel's.
Yeah
We are just about out of time on Eternals. I think we went a little bit over.
That's
but
okay.
Yeah, it's fine. Final thoughts
again. I think we've said it all, but I just don't know really what to make of it. Like, I think it's Not really. I mean, there were a lot of people that are like, it's the first un-MCU movie. I'm sorry, it's an MCU movie. Like, it's got that formula where you can see it, but it definitely is very different in many ways. I think it's a very nice-looking film, and for the most part, the roles are acted fine, but they're very wooden. Again, though, it just brings too much to the table that would have either served better for two movies to set all these characters up or a Disney Plus TV show. And I don't know if a sequel needs to happen because these characters are so OP and it just kind of retcons everything in the MCU if you continue with them and setting them up the way they've already been established. So I don't know. I'm probably going to give Eternals like a 5 out of 10.
This film, I was already going to be disappointed going in, and I just was even more disappointed. I mean, I think because although I would say I like the concepts, I like the visual effects, and the cast does pretty well for what they're doing, it's just that it's too much of a good thing. I don't even know if it's a good thing, but it's like, it just has too much. And I feel that it's really hard to get into, and the characters are just so selfish, and they tried to justify the reasons why they weren't able to stop major world events, and it just felt so half-baked. And it just felt so tiring. Like, it didn't need to be this long. It was paced super slow. And honestly, I'm hoping Marvel can go back to the drawing board and do much better. I mean, you got Spider-Man coming up, and obviously you got Black Panther 2 and Doctor Strange 2 coming up, but as is, I'm just going to give this a very disappointing 4 out of 10.
We've said it all. You two have said it too, that it was partially disappointing for me just because it did have an interesting way of being probably the most ambitious and unique Marvel film, which to some degree was partially achieved because it is unlike anything else in the MCU, but the delivery and execution is just so poor that it really doesn't matter in the end, just because I can't connect any of the characters. The story is so boring and overly expository. It looks pretty. And the powers are cool, but it felt like nothing. It felt like it was 2.5 hours that just went down the toilet. And it's not the worst MCU film. Like, I still think Thor 2 is worse than this, but it is definitely not a good one, unfortunately. And I'm also going to give it a 4 out of 10. And we're going to...
negative review of a Marvel film.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, we don't give negative reviews to Marvel stuff very often.
It's impressive. It's very impressive.
Yep. We're going to move on from Eternals to another film from Netflix, and that is Army of Thieves, which is the prequel to Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead, which came out earlier this year, and we also discussed that in a different episode. And it was directed by Matthias Schweiger. I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm not even going to bother pronouncing
it. I think it's like Schweiger or something.
Schweiger, yeah. I'm not even going to bother pronouncing that. I'm sorry. And it also stars him. He plays the same character from Army of the Dead. It also stars Natalie Emanuel, Ribio Fee, Stuart Martin, Guz Khan, and Jonathan Cohen. And in this prequel, we follow the German safecracker Ludwig Dieter, leading a group of aspiring thieves during a top-secret heist during the early stages of the zombie apocalypse that will later go on to be Army of the Dead. What do we think about this film?
Yeah, I really liked it. I really liked Army of the Dead, and I've revisited it a couple times since that episode we did back in May. So I was excited for this. I knew going into it, it wasn't going to be like a zombie movie because those are like my thing. I love zombie movies. And I knew there were probably going to be like little Easter eggs, which I thought were super fun to see. But it was mostly what I expected, kind of like this rom-com heist movie. And I thought for the most part, it was actually very fun and it worked. It doesn't really reinvent the genre. It's pretty typical and cliche, like you know exactly what's going to happen. But for what it was, I thought it was like kind of fun and a little cute. Like it's one like where you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I really liked it. I still think I like Army of the Dead a little bit more only because that I just thought was more fun. But this is very fun itself. So yeah, I enjoyed Army of Thieves a lot.
Okay, let's see what Wikipedia says on how to pronounce that last name. I got to download it, whatever. So I think it's Matthias Schweighöfer. I was not bothered. It's called Matthias. Yeah. I thought this was actually a relatively fun film. I mean, it's a very entertaining B-movie, like I said, with the last Army of the Dead. And I think it definitely had a lot more style than I was anticipating. I think Matthias really did a good job with directing this, because I feel like it just really was emblematic of the character in this film, and the main character is very likable. But there are some issues, it doesn't need to be 2 hours and 9 minutes long. I feel like an hour 45 would have been enough, but I think I actually had some fun with this, surprisingly. And of course, Hans Zimmer did the score again.
Yeah, that was surprising.
Which is interesting.
It was a surprising score, but yeah.
I assume that was his pocket money for.
Yeah, yeah, but even then, it's I think he did pretty well. I don't know. But yeah, I was entertained by this.
Yeah, I guess even though we talked about this in the Army of the Dead episode, I just want to reiterate, I absolutely detested Army of the Dead. It was a terrible, terrible, terrible film that was overly long, had god-awful cinematography, horrible characters, and was just not a fun experience overall. But I am definitely in the minority on that. If you want to hear more of our thoughts, check out our Army of the Dead episode if you would like to. So I did not want to see this, honestly. I really just did not care, especially too because I didn't like the Ludwig character from the first film either.
Really?
Tell you the truth. Yeah, I really didn't. Well, okay, I didn't like any of the characters, but my problem with him is that he just more annoyed me, really. Yeah. I didn't like his personality. He had horrible sense of comedy and humor. So I really didn't care about this one, but it's we'll talk about it. I will say it is better than Army of the Dead. It is much better. First of all, there's no dead pixels on the screen. It has style. But I still didn't really enjoy it very much. I wasn't mad, I should say. I shouldn't say I was ever it was never a point in Army of the Dead where I was just grabbing my hairs on the hairs on my head, oh, make it stop. It wasn't that bad, but it was just it was just forgettable and just
disposable.
Yeah, it's a disposable movie. I still don't like the character either. I thought maybe it's okay, if they explore some of his backstory, maybe it'll give him more character or personality. No, it was the same thing. And all the side characters are so boring and so one note. There are some interesting things with the style. I admit there is definitely more of a artistic vision, in quotes, than Army of the Dead. But I don't know, it felt like it was just ripping off other films. It seemed like you mentioned that it was kind of like Baby Driver.
Yeah, I thought it was a little bit like Baby Driver, that fun, action-packed ragtag group of people vibe.
But to me, it felt like a ripoff of Baby Driver. It's like it seemed like it was just copying. We want to copy what other heist sort of comedy films have done. And so there's really not a ton of originality to this. And even trying to connect it with the zombies, it felt very, very forced. If this probably would have actually worked better if it wasn't connected to Army of the Dead. If it was just a standalone heist film, I think it would have been a bit better. I don't think it would have been amazing, but it just felt very shoehorned in to this franchise that Zack Snyder wants to make. And Zack Snyder didn't, I think he produced it.
I think he had a story credit.
And a story credit, yeah. But other than that, if Zack Snyder just did this as a one-off thing, I think it would have been a little bit better. But yeah, I just wasn't much of a fan. It was just
I'm kind of excited to see where they go next, only because I like the Army of the Dead stuff, and I know they're doing an anime series at some point.
Which is interesting.
That'd be great. It's like Star Wars. Hopefully it's like Star Wars Visions.
Yeah.
Hopefully we got to talk about someday. But yeah.
I know they're going to do Planet of the Dead, which is sequel to Army of the Dead. But, I mean, they never showed Dieter's body, so you know he's still alive. And I think they said the main actress, I'm forgetting her name, but she was on Game of Thrones for a while. She'll probably come back too.
Emmanuel?
Yeah.
Yeah,
they clearly, a little Easter egg if you notice, what was her character's name in the movie?
Gwen.
Yeah, I think that's the name actually of the safe-cracking shop he's working in at the end of the film when Dave Bautista and his partner walk in. I was like, oh, that's an interesting reference. But yeah, she has to come back at some point probably for Army of the Dead too. So I'm excited to see where they go. It was a nice ending. Because you can kind of, if you're a fan like me, you can just watch Army of Thieves and then watch Army of the Dead. They basically directly tie right into each other.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Army of the Dead, I don't know. I think it was just not that interesting to watch. But I feel Zack Snyder, I think it's maybe because Zack Snyder was behind the camera. And I don't think it's anything against Zack Snyder because I feel like he can do okay directing. I feel like he did a pretty good job with 300. Man of Steel is just a guilty pleasure of mine because I know it's not good, but I don't know. I liked it. I grew up with it. I mean, I had the Superman costume for Christ's sake, so I'm as well. But I feel with this one, I feel like this one definitely has a little bit more of a personality to it. I mean, I know Matthew kind of said it was rip off of Baby Driver, but honestly, I kind of feel like the style like really fit the main character pretty nicely. Because I think the main character is just very eccentric, very all over the place, and very awkward. And it's like, and yeah, he's into like cracking safes. That's a very odd profession, a very odd hobby to get into, but I don't know. I mean, he seems to enjoy it so much, and it's hard not to like him for me. I don't know. I didn't personally feel annoyed by him. I thought he was a very likable character and a very likable lead. Now, that said, that is much better than the others. I mean, maybe apart from Natalie Emmanuel, like, they're not that interesting. Like, you get that one Belgian girl who is, like, so wooden, and it just didn't interest me. Then you get the driver who is just very uninteresting. Then you get the Brad Cage guy.
Brad Cage,
and it's like that scene where he's like pushing Natalie Emmanuel's trying to get off the van. Something, and he's just acting super over the top, and like, then he just said, "Yo, you want to go?" And it's like, dude, you already flexed. Don't need to flex again, man. And it just like, it's so over the top. It's like, I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking with that character. He just felt incredibly comical to me. Which I'm guessing is the value of this movie. It's very stupid, but it's very comical.
Same with the quote-unquote villain of the movie, the cop that's chasing them. He's very, not like a mustache-twirling villain, but he's definitely like a Three Stooges kind of villain where like he's always kind of like he's about to catch the characters, but like he slips on the banana peel or something and like he falls on his butt. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll be right back with more Bijou Banter. We have to transition to a quick Grant spot. Welcome back to Bijou Banter. We are continuing our conversation on Army of Thieves, and we left off talking about the comedy. And like, well, okay, comedy aside, it's like my biggest problem is that, first of all, the characters all suck. There is no way around it. They are all awful characters because they are so uninteresting and dull, especially the Brad Cage character. Like, he's just,
yo bro, you want to flex?
Yeah, it's like a caricature. And one problem that I couldn't tell was whether or not this was supposed to be an intentional comedy, or it's like it was meant to be taking itself seriously, because I feel like this movie takes itself way too seriously. It's like,
you think?
I think so, because like they're really trying to say, it's like, yeah, we want to break into these states, we want to get this money so that we could go, you know, all around the world and just sort of do these heist thing. But it's not like, I don't know, it's like there's no sense of self-awareness, though, I don't think. It seems like they're just playing it so straight, which maybe that was part of the intention, but it's not funny. It's just, it makes it harder to sit through, because it's like, I want to kind of laugh at some of these things, but if the characters aren't self-aware, it's like it's trying to be a serious sort of heist movie, then it's just, it comes off as more annoying.
Honestly, it is kind of like very annoying when like just like what they robbed the bank in Prague or something, and that like one cop was like, oh, it's like a spy movie or something. Oh, yeah. It's like, god dang, man, you don't need to be that on the nose, like
as if we're too stupid to figure it out.
Yeah, like, it's interesting you see it that way, Matthew, because I saw it as like, not that it's breaking the fourth wall like Deadpool does,
I thought
it was somewhat, for the most part, aware of what it was. Like, I thought because they went more with the comedic romance route that they were like, okay, we're kind of silly and, like, in a way, disposable but fun. I mean, I guess I can see why, you know, maybe there's some scenes where it's like, oh, my God, they're taking themselves way too seriously. But, like, the fact that, like, I think it's just so very cookie-cutter, like, you know exactly what's going to happen, kind of said a lot to me of, like, they knew.
I'll give it this. It wasn't as bad as Army of the Dead, because Army of the Dead, I think, is one of the most pretentious movies I've seen in quite a long time.
Pretentious?
Yeah, because it takes itself so seriously. It tries to be deep and have an emotional heart, but it's like, no, you should just be a dumb zombie film. If your zombie film is nearly 2.5 hours long, there's a problem right there. This movie is also pretty long, but it's not 2.5 hours, thank God. But I will say it's not nearly as... it doesn't take itself nearly as seriously as Army of the Dead. Because Army of the Dead, that was, like, painful. I'm sorry if I'm just, like, crapping all over a movie that you enjoy.
I love Army. I mean, I will say, if they took out that whole daughter element of Army of the Dead, I think a lot of people share your viewpoint, Matthew, about how, like, it is long, I will say that. But about the seriousness of it, I think if they got rid of just that whole daughter element, it would have been, like, so much more fun. Because what these kind of movies, I think Zack Snyder really should focus on if he's going to keep doing things like this, is, like, take these, like, you know, group of, like, ragtag heroes, not saying the Justice League group, but, like, you know, B-list, C-list celebrities and throw them into a situation where they can just have fun with it and they get picked off one by one. Yeah. But when you start injecting like these, you know, metaphors for like, you know, religion and Greek mythology and all this kind of stuff, I think it turns a lot of people off. And luckily I'm one of the few who like, I'm into that kind of stuff where like maybe, you know, the aliens were the ones that created the zombies or something or whatever, you know, these theories are that are out there if you watch the movie closely and then go to YouTube. But yeah, I don't know. I think that's what these kind of movies maybe should focus on more is realizing what they are. They're kind of dumb, stupid B horror comedies. And same with the Army of Thieves and, you know, not really inject so much seriousness.
I mean, I think of like what Fast and Furious is just aware of that now.
Yeah, now they are.
Well, yeah.
Now, like now, because I think they're like, oh, we're just driving cars.
I saw a tweet recently that was like, it was a question that was like, what movie franchise has changed so much from when they first started? And someone said, the Fast and the Furious franchise went from, you know, following people who were like in gangs and like hijacking cars to now
going
they're
to space.
International super spies that make James Bond look like Charlie Brown.
I would also say that probably the original Batman film series, you go from the yeah. dark and gritty Tim Burton film to the incredible comedic farce that is Batman and Robin. So, but yeah, it's like, I don't even know where I was going with this. I completely lost.
You're talking about like the seriousness.
Yeah. So like, at points they try to have some sort of comedic banter and humor, but there's no, like the characters are just so stereotypical and archetypical yeah. too. There's like, you got the brute guy who's like a stick in the mud. You got the sort of civil driver almost. And then yeah. the young hacker girl. It's like, we've seen this before. There's no personality. There's no originality with this film. And it's like, it's hard to stay engaged when it's like, you know, beat by beat. So are these story scenarios, like even when it comes down to the ending too.
Yeah, you know what's going to happen.
And especially since this is a prequel too, because we talked about this with Black Widow. Since Black Widow was a prequel, it's like there is little to like fear, I guess, because we know it's like it takes place in the past. Same with Army of Thieves. Like we know Dieter is going to be okay because it's before Army of the Dead. So.
Yeah.
We know he's going to win. We know he's going to go back with the group. It's like, it's just,
I don't know. I want to see more Brad Cage just trying to be a frat bro in the film.
I do not like that, man.
No,
I'm sure the actor is.
Honestly,
is
he got
very
really
nice.
Inspired. It's a great origin story. He was beat up in high school, and then he got inspired by Nicolas Cage doing pull-ups and just wanted to bench some books. I mean, man, you gotta give credit, like, that is an odd character. But, oh well, but it's like, yeah, I mean, I think the level of seriousness, I think, taken with this film feels out of place at times. Like, it wants to be, like, a fun little comedic heist film, but then, like, the 2 hours and 9 minutes just practically tells you, like, no, it's not gonna be that.
It's pretty stretched out, too. Like, mm-hmm. I already said, it's not as long as Army of the Dead, but... It's still, this movie could have been like 1 hour 40
yeah.
tops. There's really, because it's like, there's not a lot of depth to it, really. Mm-hmm. It feels very dragged out at times, especially near the beginning when it's sort of like the origin part. That part felt really, really stretched out. It didn't need to feel that long. Even sort of like the climax, too, just felt kind of, they really just drag everything out. It's like, mm-hmm. by the time it's like, okay, we got to reunite, it's like, I looked at the time, it's like, oh, is there only like 20 minutes left? No, there were 40 minutes left. I'm like, you added you add an additional half to this climax that didn't need to be there.
Nah, it didn't need to be there. And it's like, I don't know. I just kind of felt like, yeah, if you want to do that, probably do that like during the first half of the climax. Rather
yeah,
than, like, try to
no kidding.
I try to then rather make 2 climaxes. This isn't Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. We don't need that. I mean, no, Army of the Dead's not on that epic of a level. But
no.
I don't think it's ever going to be unless for some reason they get a budget as big as Lord of the Rings. But it doesn't warrant the second climax. I think it wanted to kind of warrant something that gives the character a little bit more depth. But, like, nah, I don't think it works.
Hmm.
Yeah. I we're sort of out of time. I kind of lost track, so I'm not really sure. Do we have any final thoughts?
Are we moving into final thoughts?
I guess, because I don't have a lot else to say, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And
I guess, yeah, we can move it. Yeah, for me, it's a very fun film. I really like the Army of the Dead franchise, and so I'm excited. It sucks because I know Zack Snyder's doing like his Star Wars, Seven Samurai, Kurosawa-inspired film Rebel Moon next. So I feel like it might be a while until we see Planet of the Dead. But for what we have right now, I really liked Army of Thieves. I think it's very fun, cute, and disposable. It doesn't reinvent the genre, but for what it is, I really had a good time watching it. It probably will be in my top 10 at the end of the year, but probably number 10 or something, only because I had fun watching it. And that's what I look for when watching a movie. I don't need to question my reality or my existence or what everything means. When I watch movies or TV shows or read a book, I look to have fun. And that's what I had while watching this. So I'm going to give Army of Thieves a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, despite what gets flaws, I think it's still a somewhat fun movie. I think because the main character is a little interesting and at least it does have a style and a tone to it that I think really makes it better than Army of the Dead, in my opinion. Although it has issues, the characters are pretty one note and the whole thing didn't need to be dragged out this long. I still had some fun with it. I think it's just a fun, disposable B movie, and I think that's all it really needs to be. So I'm just going to give this one a 5 out of 10.
Yeah, I didn't, even though I said I didn't, I had no expectations and really honestly didn't want to see it. I tried to go in with the most open mind possible because maybe I'll be surprised. Maybe this will be actually a fun time. And yeah, it was better than Army of the Dead, but still was just kind of a chore to sit through. It was very disposable, very forgettable, and just very generic too. Even after it was done, I don't really remember much about that. So if I had to choose, would I watch this over Army of the Dead? Of course, but still, it's I don't see myself watching this again anytime soon. It's just kind of it just sort of exists. It's fine. So I don't know. I'm gonna give it a 4 out of 10. I'm sorry if I really don't have much to say, but it's just it just didn't leave much of an impact on me in any way, shape, or form.
Now we wait for the anime series.
Yeah, which for sure. Who knows? Maybe that'll be a groundbreaking epic. Who knows? But that concludes this episode of Bijou Banter. Tune in next week where we're going to be talking about a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving for right before the holiday season, as well as Spencer, the latest biopic about Princess Diana starring Kristen Stewart. But until then, I've been Matthew.
I've been Orson.
And I've been Brad Cage. And I rob banks in a Nixon mask.
And we will see you all next time. Bye-bye.